Lieutenant Glover's greetings, Captain, and the watch has spotted sails approaching from the northwest. Francis William Austin set down the letter he had been reading when the midshipman entered his cabin. The remains of his breakfast lay pushed aside on the small dining table, awaiting clearance by the steward. He had eaten late, having gone on deck shortly after rising to observe a French brig that had come into their sights yesterday, and that had escaped a volley of British fire by taking refuge under the cover of a battery on shore. After assuring himself in the hazy morning light that their chase had not managed to sneak past them during the night, and giving orders to set a northeast by north course that kept their quarry in view, Austin had returned to his cabin to reread the latest dispatches over a lukewarm meal of ham and porridge. Fortunately, the coffee held its heat, and he had just poured a second cup from the pot to combat the chill of the day's early spring gales. "How many?" "Three, sir." The junior officer's eyes were bright, his face eager. At 14, he saw every foreign sail as a potential opportunity to make his fortune or distinguish himself for promotion while advancing the cause of the crown. In truth, so did most of the Royal Navy. "And the brig?" "Still skulking along shore." "Thank you, Mr. Phillips. Tell Mr. Glover that I shall join him on the forecastle directly." Left to himself once more, Captain Austin indulged in a last sip of coffee before rising from the table to resume his coat. It hung from a peg near one of the two cannons that dominated the cabin's sides, an ever-present reminder that despite the relative luxury of his accommodations compared to those of the rest of the ship's company, he was nevertheless aboard a sloop of war. The Petterel was a fast, reliable vessel of 16 guns, 24 if one included the 8 carronades mounted on the quarterdeck and forecastle. At full complement, she carried 121 men, boys, officers, and Marines, trained and disciplined to exacting standards with measurable results. Last June, they had proved their merit and valor as part of a fleet action under Vice Admiral Lord Keith, in which they captured a French squadron of 5 ships of the line near Toulon. Now, on blockade duty in the Western Mediterranean Sea, the Petterel was under general orders to intercept any vessel that came in her path, whether naval or private, thus crippling French commerce and thwarting Napoleon's attempts to supply and reinforce the army he had left behind in Egypt. Austin hoped the Petterel would prove the making of him, the means by which he would rise from a mere commander addressed as captain out of courtesy to a post-captain, title, right epaulette, and all. Making post was the most significant promotion of a naval officer's career, the date from which the seniority that determined all further advancement was established. A full captain could command larger ships for better pay, frigates and ships of the line, perhaps serve as a flag captain to an admiral. Until that day came, however, Austin was content to command the Petterel to the best of his ability to carry out his duty, knowing that the smaller engagements of his sloop contributed to the greater efforts of the war that all in His Majesty's Navy strove and sacrificed to win. As he adjusted the single epaulette on his left shoulder and smoothed dark blue lapels over his white waistcoat, his gaze strayed to the letter he had been reading when the midshipman interrupted him. "My dear Frank, I just today received your letter of July 27th and expect this reply will be more traveled than you by the time you read it." The missive had been forwarded to him along with the dispatch packet he had received last evening and was from Jane, his younger sister and most faithful correspondent. Separated by little more than a year in age, they shared the dark eyes and slender nose common to the Austin family. But more important, they shared a determination to stay in contact as best they could, despite the obstacles of distance and war. Other family members wrote him as well, but Jane's tidings were rendered with sharp observation and wit that was uniquely hers. The letters often took months to find him and sometimes arrived out of order, but he treasured every one, for they were his connection to the people with whom he was not Captain Austin, but Frank, and to the home he had left when not quite 12 to enter the Naval College at Portsmouth. Now just 1 month shy of 26, he had already served in the Navy more than half his life. Frank put away Jane's closely written pages, and with them thoughts of the family he had not seen since before taking command of the Petterel in Gibraltar 13 months earlier. More urgent matters demanded his attention. The letter joined others in his sea chest, which, like all of the room's furniture, would be removed to the hold if the decks were cleared for action. The dispatches he secured on his person in an inner pocket of his coat. From the windows of his cabin beneath the quarterdeck, he could not see the sails Mr. Glover had reported, but he could hear the north wind, which blew strong today. With full canvas, the unknown vessels could be within range of the Petterel before noon. He reached for his hat and settled the bicorn over dark hair worn closely cropped in a futile attempt to control its curls in the Mediterranean humidity. Captain Austin once more, he headed for the door. 3 ships. If friendly, they and the Petterel would exchange news. If not, they would exchange fire. Thank you.